Is it pressed? Do you want me to press it on?
No, it's going.
It's going. Hello there. Future world listening. Right. My good friends. Thank you, Dario.
Sure.
My darling buddy. Well, where am I? Well, hello, everybody. It is very sweet to be here. My last visit was a hot day, I believe, a work party, many hours long, wheelbarrowing up mulch from the front, and
creating the embankment.
Yes, I was thinking. I've been on Bill and I, our organic farm now for over 25 years, approaching 30. And one of the things I was struck by after many years, I would look out in the field and realize that my hands, I've been on hands and knees on this whole 6 acres, and I've touched every inch of soil, eventually touched every inch of soil. And I was thinking of the difference between when I was last here and what's happening now, that there's a sense that every surface has been touched, is being touched by human hands, right? The vacuuming and the washing and the windows and the soil and the plants, and how important that is that we don't hire robots to build Zen centers yet. Tempting as that is, it's lovely and it's felt, right? A place that is loved and like clay brought into existence. So I am so happy for this center and honored to be here and partake of the great flowering, and enjoy the coziness before we are in the spaciousness, right? Next door. Just a few more dollars and we're there, right? So, may it be so. Tonight I want to talk about sickness, disease, and practice, because as a therapist, and some people in the room probably have this experience, right? All of a sudden you start getting the calls, can't come in today, got the sickness. And then you get another call, someone's sick, and look around the zendo, oh, that person's missing. So it's the season we begin to be intimate with sickness. But also on a more serious note, several of our members are dealing with cancer treatment, and tests that haven't come back yet, right? That could be dire. So it's not only our common colds that run through, but our life and death experience as humans. But also what's circulating around is the illness of the planet. That there is the planet, we could say, has a great fever. And it's hot. And it's getting hotter. And we are called to tend the illness of this planet now. So all of that is brought me back to bringing out some of the recent things we've been studying and what I consider is the three most important teachings on sickness from our Zen tradition. And so I want to bring out those three and then tie it back to this earth that we are dependent upon. What I'd say about these three exchanges, two exchanges and one statement from a Zen master, is that they're meant to be carried. They're not easy to understand. So if they kind of perplex you, please just take them home with you. They kind of belong on the wall as reminders. And they're asking us to shift from a mind state that we all know well, which is constricted and reactive and fearful when it comes to illness and disease, to one that is tender-hearted and responsive and awake and liberated. So the promise of practicing with sickness and disease is great, great teacher. So I'll start with the first one, which is from the Vimalakirti Sutra. Is anyone familiar with that Vimalakirti Sutra? Couple. So I really should get some kickbacks from Joan Sutherland because I really want to promote her book, which is lovely. I'll read something from it a little later.
You'll be reading it in the spring.
Are you? Wonderful. Never mind. Okay. It's beautiful. I was so happy we brought it forward, and everybody in the Sangha loved it. It's a commentary from a contemporary teacher on the Vimalakirti Sutra. I'll just try to introduce a little bit because I want to get to the exchange. This is a sutra written 500 years or so after the Buddha's life about a amazing, extraordinary lay teacher, master, Zen master, which is an unusual archetype at the time. And Vimalakirti, it was said, he would be comfortable anywhere. He was always, whether he was with people who lived on the street or with the CEOs of company at the time, whatever that would be equivalent, kings and queens, he had wealth, he had family and children, and he would always be responsive, but he wasn't caught by those things. He would respond to the conditions. So he was always teaching, always giving the medicine needed for the time. And for us lay people in the West, this is a real sutra for us to know. It's not always taught, but I find as a lay teacher, it's so inspiring to read about this teacher. And so the sutra itself, the Vimalakirti Sutra, has a long, extraordinary story. But I'll just give you the setup that's important, which is that it's set in a kind of a mythical description, almost like the Lotus Sutra, of around the Buddha's time. So the Buddha's there with all of his disciples and the bodhisattvas that we study, Kuan Yin and Manjushri. And the Vimalakirti is pretending to be sick. So he's in bed in a 10 by 10 room. And he does this purposefully, supposedly, to as teaching. And so the Buddha and all his disciples and the bodhisattvas and some of his key people all gathered, as they are in the old sutras, away from where Vimalakirti is sick. And this is the most humorous part, which is that one by one, the Buddha asks all of his disciples, one by one, to go and visit and check up on Vimalakirti. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see this played out. We have to do a play of it.
Yeah.
Because you don't find this anywhere, but one by one they go up and they're like, well, it's like, can you go and check on Vimalakirti? They're like, well, you know, I'm not really worthy to do that because last time I saw Vimalakirti, he kind of, you know, showed me what was what in the Dharma. That's a short story. And each of them have descriptions of how Vimalakirti came and kind of confronted them on their narrow view of the Dharma, despite them being bodhisattvas and great enlightened people. And they were rightly so awed, and they said, thank you for the teaching. And so it goes through, it says 800 disciples refused to come. And then he went through the bodhisattvas.
They were scared.
Yeah, they were scared of him. We don't, you know. So finally, they all, like, I could just see this now. Really, we have to do this as a play. They kind of push Manjushri forward because he's the, you know, Buddha of wisdom. He has a sword at least. And they push him forward to go. And the story continues in this mythical way where all thousands of people pile into this 10 by 10 room. And they have lots of space. Thrones descend, flowers fall. It's a great sutra, so please check it out. And John does a beautiful work. However, this is the piece I wanted to bring out, which is that Manjushri, it's very modern, what's unfolding there. Manjushri goes to Vimalakirti and says, well, you're sick, huh? But you're such a great master. If you're such a great master, why don't you use your spiritual powers and not be sick? So it's really where he's coming from, which is, strikes me as incredible contemporary, ever kind of like, well, you're a yogi. How did you get that cold? You know? You're a Zen Buddhist. Why are you depressed? You know? We have all kinds of ideas of how enlightened we should be and how we should naturally not fall prey to sickness. And so it's great from Manjushri. But Vimalakirti gives an interesting answer, which is, he says, I am sick because the world is sick. I'm sick because the world is sick. That's his teaching. So I'm going to back up a little bit and unfold this piece before moving to the next exchange, which is to ask that question of what is sickness? Where are its boundaries? How do we experience sickness? We notice we want to fix it and put it out there and move away from it. We want the cure. We think it is something out of place. It's not something I'm supposed to have. I was remembering a story, a great experience I had many years back in a long retreat at Green Gulch Farm, so a month-long retreat. And usually 90 to 100 people would gather there, so it was a lot, big zendo, beautiful. I'm sitting very deeply. And after the first week, I looked up and around and I noticed, oh, where'd that person go? Okay, well, then, oh, where'd that person go? And all of a sudden, there were less people in the Zendo day after day until Reb Anderson, who was teaching, started to refer to the retreat plague. And then I was like, aha, I see what's happening. And then I could hear the sniffles and the coughing. Mm-hmm. So one by one, people were dropping. Now, I don't know about you, but we probably all do this, which is like, I'm like, if I sit really still and breathe shallowly, I don't think I'll get it. If I just sort of just do my thing, and I could see I was sort of trying to get a Zen force field around my body. I did not want this cold. I was sitting deeply, having a great time at this retreat. I did not want that cold. And so, you know, don't touch anything, wash your hands, shallow breathing, samadhi, right? But then I could see the tension that was building in that, keeping that away, keeping that cold at bay. Vitamin C, the whole nine yards. Until one morning I woke up with a sore throat. And I was like, wow. And it just shed. I was like, I have it. I have the cold. All of a sudden I joined the human race. It was a great relief. It was like, this is wonderful. Right? This is an example of how we keep and push away. And there was an enlightenment to that. And I felt all of a sudden bonded with my brethren who were all coughing. They were all returning to the Zendo and I was leaving. Spent my couple of days in bed and returned. And it was a good teaching for me of how we do this. Shariputra says to Vimalakirti at some point, all I see is a broken world out there. All I see is suffering and sickness. And that's one view. He joins Manjushri in that. But Vimalakirti is offering something else, and because I cannot do it justice, I have to read a passage from Joan Sutherland about Vimalakirti's response, because it's too beautiful. I'll give you a teaser for your spring study group, is that right? This is what she says about Vimalakirti's response. Who really loved the world, he said, Joan says, this response of the I am sick because the whole world is sick, this is the purest formulation of Vimalakirti's absolute, unquestioned, unmitigated, unbuffered, uncompromised allegiance to his world. I am the world and the world is me. We have one condition. When the world's heart is breaking, my heart breaks. When the morning star rises, I rise with it. I am the sorrow of the world and its joy, and we share the same fate. To love is to love the world, and to hate is to hate the world. The world's healing is my healing, in which I have an infinitesimal and essential part. It is that simple, that naked and open, that settled in the deepest places, the underground delta, where the river of my heart mind meets the sea of the worlds. Here is my condition out of which everything flows. When I can touch this without twitching, abide here without fleeing, what naturally flows into me from the sea of the world is bodhicitta, the intention toward awakening, because my awakening is the world's awakening. I am waking because the whole world is awakening. That is Vimalakirti's I. That is his I am sick with the world as sickness, which completely transforms that constriction and holding at bay and otherness into love and engagement and freedom. It's beautiful. We have one condition. I and the world have one condition. Just this. So I'll come back to this. I want to bring in the second great teaching about sickness, and that's from Tozan. Tozan, for those who know the precious mirror samadhi, guys chant that, yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And who are in the Soto school, that's it, what we are, right? So To is Tozan, or Dongshan is the Soto, the toe of Soto, and the supposed author or a transmitter of the precious mirror samadhi. So a very important ancestor. And this, each of these exchanges bring out another nuance. They are such good for our sickness. This is a different view, another side of the coin, I might say. So a student goes up to ask Dongshan, this is more appropriate name, who's sick, Dongshan is sick. Student says, is there one who is not sick? Is there someone who's not sick? To Dongshan. And Dongshan says, yes, there is. And the student says, does that that one take care of you? And I like that because it's a point, that's a question that's sort of like, is that one who's not sick like your patron saint? Do you have a nice angel who's taking care of you while you're ill? Many of us have that kind of view sometimes, of needing that. But his answer is brilliant to that, which he says to the student, I take care of him. I take care of him. There is a, it ties back to Vimalakirti's point about bodhicitta. When we are clear about our illness not being from a separate self, something that is wrong and bad and other that we need to fight and oppose, we are inclined, our hearts are opened to the only position we have that's the strongest position, which is bodhicitta, the will or the impulse to awaken together with all beings and to serve the world, not as separate, to save all beings, as our chant goes. I take care of him. He's saying that while sick. Right? So usually when we're sick, we kind of draw in. That's a natural thing, right? I don't have room for anybody else. I'm sick. And so that's one side, a relative side that has its place. But he says, even in my sickness, I take care of him. So this exchange is asking us, particularly in the Zen school, to find that one. Who is that one? Who is the one who is not sick when you're sick? And that is that eternal, essential, still, ineffable place that is never sick, even while sick. And we are tasked when we sit deeply and unfold things to see what's in the way of knowing that. If we don't know that place, then all we have is tragedy. We have this body that's prone to sickness and death. But that's not what Zen is saying. It's not who you are. So I want to bring in the third teaching, which is probably maybe 100 years subsequent, I want to say, from Tozan's life, is Yunmen. And it's yet another facet to this. So it's not an exchange. Yunmen, who's a great Zen master, comes into the assembly one day and says, sickness or disease and medicine correspond to each other. Other translations are arise together, meet one another, subdue one another. All of those work. He says, the whole world is medicine. Who are you? Another way to say it, the whole world is medicine. What is the self? What is yourself? Who are you? And I would add to that exchange another follow-up question from that. How will you respond? It's another deep inquiry to that question. The whole world is medicine. How? Now, for a lot of us, that's not, you open the paper, that doesn't seem to be the case, right? Looks like the whole world hell in a handbasket. It's like, oh my God, where's the medicine? That's not what's being said here. The whole world is teaching. The whole world is presence. If we see with a Dharma eye, and that changes everything, how we move forward. When we see into these exchanges and these teachings, sickness becomes it corresponds with healing and wholeness. They are one whole. So I'll read it. I want to draw this back and I'll try to relate it to some of you know that Mushin and I are developing a retreat in January called Climate of Mind, and that we are looking to take up in Sesshin the realities of threat to the planet due to climate change, which is unusual to do during a Sesshin. Yeah. And so it's been a lot on my mind is what does it mean to practice with the realities that are before us that are hard to look at for any length of time, hard to let in. And so I want to talk about each one of these in relation to that in a very brief way. Vimalakirti's, if we go back to Vimalakirti, I am sick because the whole world is sick, really changes our eye on what's happening on the planet as something that's separate from us and caused by some other individuals who are not so enlightened. When we see, when we move into what's happening globally as part of us, part of our body, we have the potential to see into some of the root causes of what's happening. When I see that the ocean water and the fish and the air and hot and cold flow through and are my body, then my approach and response comes from a very different place. I can no longer take a kind of a moral high ground to claim separate that I know what's what and everyone else should get on board. I have to be in the fray. I have to be in the world and responding from that place of tenderness and accepting the reality that's before us. If I don't, then this opposition keeps strain and pushing. And many of us struggle there. We push and we strain, and then we turn the off button because we can't really stay there. But Vimalakirti's place is loving the world. Loving the world amidst its pain. That's a very profound stance. So it's good teaching for us in this time. Tosan's exchange is a little bit different, but similar. This world is not about making a place for me to be comfortable. The planet is not here for my comfort. Though we act as if it is, right? We act as if it's, even those who have enlightened views about resource use still act that we are using things, right? We use, rather than what the true reality is, which is a profound interconnectedness and interdependence. And a world that exists separate of me for its own right. Trees and plants and birds are not put here for my consumption. And they have a life and a value, intrinsic value of their own. So Tosan's view is asking us, what does our life serve? When the exchange is, when he says, I take care of him, what do I take care of? What is mine to take care of? What does my life serve? And that comes back to the Bodhisattva vow, which is, again, with what's happening globally on the planet, there's no one solution, or we would have solved this problem. It's incredibly complex, and it involves all of us, all of our participation. So I cannot have with my brain a solution, but my heart and my body can act, and I can serve something greater beyond my own life, which is a profound interconnectedness. And to share that with others, to share that Dharma view with others, that shifts my eye. And all of these shifts move us from constriction and reactivity to open-hearted strength and engagement, vitality. Nishin earlier asked us in our mountain pose to find the vitality, right? That's so needed, because if we are in a narrow, constricted view, we're exhausted and tired and depressed and forlorn. Those are not conducive qualities to living, and that's why we turn away. So Tozan's exchange, very, very important. And what it says is there, he's saying that there's no escape, no escape. It's really beautiful. All of these see into, I didn't use the word, they all see into the emptiness, also vastness or boundlessness. They come from that place. They come from the basic core truth that Zen points to and asks us to move from that place in the world. Lastly, the teaching I get from Yunmen on sickness and medicine arise together. The whole world is medicine. What is a self? I've been noticing, sharing with Mushin earlier, how if I am caught in a kind of way of all of the enormous challenge we face as a planet, if I am just caught with that and I watch to see what EPA rule is being thrown overboard, or where the emissions are currently, or where a hot place in the planet is. If I immerse myself in that, I'm in overwhelm pretty quickly. That's a very hard place to be. But what I've been noticing in the last 6 months is how much response is starting to gain momentum out there. And when my eye turns to that, I see, yes, there is wisdom in every corner, from business people to children in school to farmers to average householders like ourselves, who are responding and responding with what makes sense in the moment. Does anyone have the whole? No, they don't. And there's a beautiful where, I love where Joan says, we have an infinitesimal and essential part. We say infinitesimal, then we say, why bother if we'll only stay there? That's the part I have. And essential. It's essential that I come forward in the way, in the corner of the world that I live in. So I've been inspired to see that. And each wisdom, everyone has wisdom. This is not about good guys and bad guys that it sometimes boils down to in some ways of framing climate change. Though there are some people who have influenced this more than others. But that's secondary to the shared reality we all are in now. It's one of those unequivocal shared reality, and there will be no escape for anybody. That's an unprecedented condition on the planet. Many have opted out of certain sufferings that the human race has experienced, but this one will not. No one will get a ticket out. So it is really our call this time to, as Buddhists, we say, yes, we already, it's been one of our core teachings, is that we are all affect each other. But now it's actually pretty obvious in a global mind. So this piece from Yunmen, it arises together. If we are looking with that view, then we become part of that response. Part of that response. The whole world is medicine. That means any time that we bring the presence of Zazen, our bodhicitta, our vow to awaken, everything appears as medicine. Everything is healing. And in its ineffable arising, in an interdependent way, it's all right there. So that's a koan to carry, because that doesn't make sense at first, right? The whole world's medicine, that doesn't feel like... You mean mosquitoes? The plague? But you have to take a double look. And in some ways, if we get through this, or I don't want to say it that way, but climate change is medicine for a humanity, a wake-up call to decide who we are and what the meaning of life is. Is it to consume and continue to be who we are and look to technology and comforts of life as our main calling, or something else? And Buddhism has a piece of that, but I don't want the whole piece, right? It's for all of us to decide, why are we here? So there's even medicine in what we face right now, if we see it in that way and can respond. So I take I come back to these three teachings on sickness and medicine and disease all the time. Buddhism, the Buddha was called a great physician, and that this is medicine, this place is medicine, right? And that the disease we are trying to cure is not the common cold or even cancer, but the disease of confusion and fear and constriction that we latch onto and our reactivity. And it's amazing that, and how enduring the teachings have been, that the medicine that Buddhism offers is reliable. And it does heal and does cure that disease, our disease of our confusion. And that makes us open, and we have the capacity to hold what we fear as the kind of conventional diseases that we will all be subject to. And I think they're essential to how we move forward collectively. These teachings are liberating. The question in the last exchange, the whole world is medicine, what is the self, is that question. Who are you? Who are you human beings, actually? So it's not just asking us, who is this? Who are you all? And we will have an infinitesimal and essential part in that answer. and I feel like called to the table, like a kind of the spiritual UN, where Buddhism says, well, we have something here. What do you have? And what do you have? And what do you have? That's what's needed. And I think many people are seeing that. Many people worldwide. Incredible. Incredible connections are being made that would have never been made before this crisis. So I'll close with reading a piece of Sutherland's, just because she's so beautiful. I am the world and the world is me. We have one condition. When the world's heart is breaking, my heart breaks. When the morning star rises, I rise with it. I am the sorrow of the world and its joy. We share the same fate. To love is to love the world. To hate is to hate the world. The world's healing is my healing, in which I have an infinitesimal and essential part. It is that simple, that naked and open, that settled in the deepest places. The underground delta where the river of my heart mind meets the sea of the worlds. Here is my condition out of which everything flows.